Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, wait a minute. I'm sorry.
Don't worry.
Can we start over?
No problem. Well, you just shake it up and
just,
we can
just turn that part over and,
exactly, and start again.
Give it a shake.
Yeah.
Okay. Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin. And Ron, do you think the listener got that Etch-a-Sketch joke?
Well, you know, the Etch-a-Sketch is still with us. I had thought that that was a toy that had gone into the annals of toyness and toydom, but that it was no longer a current toy.
I thought the Santorum candidacy was something that had gone into the annals of toydom, especially after what happened in Illinois and Puerto Rico when Rick Santorum went down to San Juan and said the official language should be Swedish. I thought that was strange. But Illinois, a thumping by Mitt Romney.
Thumping?
Yes.
Thumping? Is that like a thwacking and a stomping?
Certainly is. But, I mean, not only a 12-point margin in statewide.
Big time.
But the delegates, the big delegates, tons of delegates, 51 out of 60 or something like that.
Yeah, it was a 3-to-1, 4-to-1 kind of situation with delegates. And, of course, as we know, in the end, it is all about the delegates.
Well, it is.
But it's also about the perception. And week after week, even as Romney has widened or at least lengthened his lead in delegates, people have not felt as though he was getting the job done, in part because he was just squeaking by in Michigan, in Ohio, in various places where he would win. He didn't seem to be winning impressively.
And even when he was losing Alabama, Mississippi, Kansas, he was still coming out with more delegates. But ultimately, you're absolutely right. When Santorum wins, like in Alabama, Mississippi, he gets the big headlines. When
Colorado, Minnesota, Missouri, where he got no delegates,
right,
really bound or committed, but he got huge headlines.
But when Romney wins Ohio, Michigan, not such big headlines because he won by a fewer margin than people expected. It wasn't impressive, especially for somebody who is the next nominee. But this is the first time since Florida where it was a complete victory. I mean, there's no asterisk on any of the thing that happened in Illinois.
Except that the next day it was partially erased when it was turned upside down and shaken when one of Romney's closest and longest-serving advisors, Eric Fernstrom, went on CNN and answered a question about whether or not Mitt Romney could pivot off of a conservative primary season and be centrist enough in the fall.
Well, I think you hit a reset button for the fall campaign. Everything changes. It's almost like an Etch-a-Sketch. You can kind of shake it up, and we start all over again.
Okay. Ron and I are both making, as the listener would know, the same face right now. Look, first of all, Mitt Romney did not say that. Fernstrom said that.
It's Fernstrom, I'm afraid.
What?
It's Fernstrom.
F-E-H-R?
Yeah, and it's a Scandinavian name, so I get to have something to say about
this. Okay.
Okay?
Okay, so Leif Erikson. In fairness to Mitt Romney, the candidate didn't say this. His top aide did say that. But here's the problem with this. Of all the controversies we've seen so far, like, you know, Romney betting $10,000 or talking about
I'll bet you $10,000.
That doesn't bother me. But this...
Well, my wife's got two Cadillacs.
Right. And how much speaking fees he may have made, and that's just a pittance.
You know, I'm really not worried about the poorest.
Okay, now, all those things clearly add to the misstatements and the missteps by the Romney campaign. But this one, I think, really hurts, not because Romney said it, but because this is the view of Romney that so many in the party have, that he's moved to the right just to win over conservative voters in the primaries and caucuses, and then to move back to the center in the general election. But he can't do that if he spent the whole campaign trying to convince people he's a true conservative.
It's so much like John Kerry getting on a wind surfboard or showing pictures of himself going back and forth and back and forth on a wind-driven vehicle of any kind, right, but particularly a surfboard with no keel whatsoever. Just the sort of sense of I'll go wherever the wind blows me in 2004.
It allows you to flip-flop, right?
Exactly. And it played exactly in a very pop culture sort of way into a great visual that everyone could relate to and that underlined exactly what his critics and his opponents were saying about it.
And it comes, and the thing with Romney, it comes the day after he got the endorsement of Jeb Bush. Now everybody says...
Wasn't it the same day, practically, that Jeb Bush was coming out for him, which was a huge, huge thing, not just in Florida and not just for Jeb, but pretty much for the whole Bush family and that whole wing of the party.
Well, a lot of people said that if Jeb Bush really wanted to make a difference, he should have made the endorsement before the Florida primary. That's not what Jeb Bush wanted to do. Jeb Bush wanted to see what the party was up to, wanted to see where the voters were going. And after the big win in Illinois, he said, okay, there's been 34 contests. Everybody gave it their best shot. It looks like Santorum needs 69-70% of the remaining delegates to have a chance at the nomination. What Jeb Bush was saying, we've had our fun. Now it's time to unite and focus on beating President Obama. And this Etch-a-Sketch thing comes the same day and trips all over that message.
The pattern we've seen, though, up to now, is that Romney kind of gets his act together. He wins
Florida.
New Hampshire.
Florida.
He wins Florida. He wins Michigan and Ohio. Now he's got Illinois.
But in between, he loses.
But in between, always something else comes up. Some smaller state where he loses. Some place where the margin wasn't good enough. Some gaffe that he or someone in his campaign makes. And the next couple of events have some dangers for him. He's probably going to lose down in Louisiana, where we assume Santorum's Alabama, Mississippi-style appeal.
On Saturday.
On Saturday. Right. And that Mitt Romney will not smell quite as good on Sunday as he did on Thursday and Friday. And then, of course, a week from this coming Tuesday, on April 3rd, we have a group of primaries. Some of them are pretty good for Mitt Romney. He's probably going to do fine in the District of Columbia and in Maryland. But there's a bigger state. There's Wisconsin. Now, this is just 10 electoral college votes, but it is right now a kind of ground zero of the struggle between the Tea Party movement, if you will, and the more traditional Democratic forces in that state. They've got a recall election going on.
Which will get
Governor
you,
Scott
which
Walker
will get
we'll talk about
bit,
in
yeah.
a moment. But that's going to bring out a kind of voter in Wisconsin that is a strong base for Rick Santorum. And it is also a state with a strong right-to-life movement, much like Minnesota and Colorado and Missouri, the states that really launched the Rick Santorum comeback. So it's a good possibility Rick Santorum wins in Wisconsin and gets a little bit of his momentum back and has every reason to stay in the race and keep waving that Etch-a-Sketch around.
Well, I think you're going way too far in the future by going into April 3rd and Wisconsin. Let's just focus for a second on Saturday and Louisiana. For all the messages that came out of Romney's big victory in Illinois, everybody was saying, okay, Jeb Bush is saying, other people saying, okay, it's time to end this race. And then if Santorum wins in Louisiana, we're exactly back to where we started from. It's a battle, you know, that's going to go on well into the spring. Now, one name we haven't mentioned is Newt Gingrich. Again, Newt Gingrich basically skipped Illinois to go straight into Louisiana. Look, Newt Gingrich, out of 34 contests, have won a total of two. He's won South Carolina and his home state of Georgia. Didn't do so great in Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana.
Finished second.
Well, second, but I mean, you know.
But not that close.
Well, John McCain finished second in the 2008 presidential election, which was in the top two, but not good enough.
It's true. I believe that Gingrich's strategy absolutely required him winning Alabama and Mississippi and then going on into Louisiana and eventually contesting some of these other southern states, Arkansas, Kentucky, Texas. But he didn't do it. He didn't get it done in Alabama and Mississippi. And if he doesn't get it done in Louisiana, does he finally drop out? Here's what Newt Gingrich had to say when he was talking to NPR's Steve Inskeep on Morning Edition this week about why he's still in the race and about his reservations about the front-runner Mitt Romney.
Nobody who cares about the future of the party has any incentive to get out because you have no reason to believe that he is, you know, even in Illinois where he outspent Santorum by a huge margin, he still is below 50%. By the way, it was sobering in Illinois. They had a lower turnout than in 2008. That's not a good sign for the fall.
Well, that all makes sense, but of course, Newt Gingrich, who got 8% in Illinois, below Ron Paul's 9.3%.
He finished fourth.
I mean, it's like
out of four.
It's like saying Ken Rudin and Hank Aaron have a total of 755 home runs. Now, I have zero, but I mean, Newt Gingrich is trying to say that the combined total of what Rick Santorum got and what I got is really more than majority, but I mean,
It does not work that way.
And for him to say that they're going to turn to me at the convention, now he's saying I can influence who the nominee will be at the convention. That's much different than the convention turning to me.
The other thing you could say that Gingrich wants is just a chance to shine and have a special night of his own or at least an hour of his own at the convention. But look at all the other people who are going to want to have that. You're going to have to accommodate Rick Santorum. I mean, he'll have hundreds of delegates. You're going to have to accommodate Ron Paul. It is widely believed that Mitt Romney has already made some sort of representation to Ron Paul about how the two of them will behave in Tampa and how Ron Paul's people will be accommodated in Tampa.
They won't be, by the way.
But what I'm saying is that all these guys at this point are asking themselves, what happens to me in Tampa? Am I humiliated? Am I left out? Do I get any kind of time out there, you know, in the big splash of light? What are they going to do with Sarah Palin? They got to have Sarah Palin.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do. What Newt Gingrich wants here is not to get the delegates to be the nominee. That's too late. That's gone.
Does he know that?
I think he can do the math. He would need over 90% of all the delegates. That's impossible, even if the rest of the party, you know, essentially conceded it to him.
He certainly thinks that Romney could be stopped in advance of the convention.
That's correct, and that's what he wants. He wants an open convention where theoretically anyone could be nominated. Now, there are some rules that require that whoever the convention turns to at that point actually have been, in some sense or another, a contestant.
You also have to win five states.
That's right. You have to have been in the fight.
Right. You have to win five states to be nominated.
But that could be rescinded. They could upset that rule. They could repeal that rule.
For Newt?
Not for Newt, but for someone. If it were an open convention, in Newt Gingrich's mind, he is as logical as a Sarah Palin or a Jeb Bush or a Mitch Daniels or somebody else the party might turn to. But he needs the convention to be open before that fantasy can even exist. So what about what Newt Gingrich was saying about signs for the fall? Lower turnout in Illinois this time than in 2008. He also said Romney can't turn people out. Are Republicans counting on their nominee to turn people out, or are they counting on Barack Obama to turn Republicans out?
Wait, so we're blaming Mitt Romney for the poor turnout? Why aren't we blaming Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich for the poor turnout?
Well, what he's saying is if Mitt Romney is inevitable and if he's the juggernaut, he should be generating more enthusiasm, and that's a legitimate criticism.
Then so should Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul.
All right. You are right, sir. I will step back. Okay, yeah. Let's talk about something a little bit different. If Barack Obama is the one great unifying force for the Republican Party, is his greatest vulnerability at this point the price of gasoline and the apparent difficulties he's having with his energy policy?
Well, one would think absolutely. And, you know, we talk about more and more job creations, and those numbers are looking good. But between 8.3% unemployment and
8.3% unemployment, still not very attractive.
What president since FDR has won with that much unemployment? Nobody.
It's worse than Jimmy Carter. Yeah. It's worse than George H.W. Bush before they lost after their first terms.
Right.
So Obama will be the factor turning out Republicans in the fall. Even if they're not that crazy about Mitt Romney, they're that crazy about getting rid of Barack Obama.
Well, just as the Republicans are anxious to get rid of Barack Obama, the Democrats in Illinois were certainly anxious to get rid of a bunch of Republicans in the House delegation, and that's why they redrew the map.
Is that what we call a segue?
What's a segue?
Are we now about two pounds? Right. So we are going now to talking about those primaries that took place this week in congressional races in Illinois.
Yes. So Illinois Democrats, one of the few states where they controlled the entire redistricting process. They got rid of one Republican in Illinois' 16th district by merging Don Manzullo and Adam Kinzinger in the same district.
Now, this is a 20-year veteran and a freshman.
Right. Now, interestingly enough, the establishment, or Eric Cantor, backed Kinzinger and the Tea Party.
They backed the freshman against the 20-year veteran.
Yeah. And then, therefore, the Tea Party is saying, wait a second, if the establishment is backing Kinzinger, therefore, we must back Manzullo. So it was kind of strange, but the point is Kinzinger has a long future in the party. He'll win the seat in November, and Manzullo's career is over. Another interesting primary was in Chicago with Jesse Jackson Jr., given the fact that he has ethics questions regarding
the House Ethics Committee still has a case open.
But regarding what he may have talked to Rod Blagojevich about getting appointed to the Obama Senate seat. So he had a challenger, Debbie Halverson, a former one-term member of the House. But he clobbered her like 70 to 30.
It's still a Chicago district. Probably a lot of those people in the suburbs.
It's African-American,
that
African-American
have been
majority.
Added. Don't even know they're in that district yet.
Well, African-American majority, and plus the fact he still got all the establishment. He got Mayor Emanuel. He got Barack Obama. He got Governor Quinn.
He lined them up.
They said, look, you know, he is too valuable to lose, and so that was a slam dunk.
Before we leave the Midwest, we really need to take a quick notice of what's going on in Wisconsin. As we mentioned, their primary is coming up on April 3rd. There's a presidential primary there on the Republican side, but all attention in the state is on the recall election.
Right. Governor Scott Walker, looks like the recall will be on the ballot. We don't know if it's May or June, depending if there's a Democratic primary. But there's also some news in Wisconsin as well. Pam Galloway, one of the Republican state senators who is up for recall, decided to resign her seat immediately. And that moves the state Senate to 16 Democrats and 16 Republicans. The Republicans lose control of the state Senate. Remember, when Scott Walker was elected 2 years ago, it was 19-14, the Republican lead, and now it's 16 all.
Also, quick couple of notes with respect to the Senate. There's a controversy brewing, of course, in Nebraska over whether or not Bob Kerrey, who wants to be the senator from Nebraska again, has lived there in any recent decade. And, of course, his residence is not in Nebraska right now. And in Indiana, we have a parallel where Dick Lugar no longer has a permanent residence in the state. And that's being used against him in the Republican primary by Richard Murdoch, his opponent.
And speaking of Congress, Barbara Mikulski, the senator from Maryland, broke a record. As of this week. She served more than 35 years in Congress.
House and Senate combined.
House and Senate combined, which is the longest tenure for a woman in congressional history. Interesting thing about Barbara Mikulski, when she first came to Congress in 1977, there were only 21 total female members of Congress, House and Senate combined. Now there are 92. Barbara Mikulski is now the longest-serving woman in Congress. Of course, Ron Elving, when she was elected in 1986 to the Senate, she succeeded
Charles Mathias.
That is correct.
And on that note, that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Magical silvery screen, my Ohio heart. Etch a sketch, turn the dial, then you'll see what I mean. Yeah, your fun time starts with Etch a Sketch. A line appears magically, shaking a sign down. It's all you see, Ohio heart. Etch a Sketch, a magical drawing toy. That's Ohio heart. Etch a Sketch, almost everyone can enjoy. Yeah, Ohio heart. Just get it.